You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 29th of June 2013 on Monocle 24. A man whose magazine has shaped Thailand's design scene for nearly two decades, and a woman who started on the fashion frontline but now holds the editor's seat at one of Thailand's glossiest titles. Coming from Bangkok, this is episode 44 of The Stack. As ever, there's lots to read and rifle through on the programme, and in a moment we'll be spending an hour with two distinguished guests who know the Thai print industry from the inside out. Plus, we'll be hitting Bangkok's magazine and book stands with our two intrepid Asia bureau chiefs.
Serindia means the Silk Road between China and India. So it was known as publishers of books on Himalayan arts. So it focuses on Tibetan art, Nepal, India, cultures of the Himalayan region.
And our man in Paris witnesses the launch of an American print classic with a French touch.
We thought that France was at long last ready to have its own Vanity Fair.
All that, and as usual, a little bit more right here on The Stack on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Stack here on Monocle 24. This week brought to you from the subtropically cool surroundings of the Thailand Creative and Design Centre here in Bangkok. And if you're wondering where the host of the show, the normal host, that is Tyler Brulé, is, well, he's sneaked off for a little bit of a visit to a very important guest here in Bangkok. I'm Andrew Tuck, and this week we'll be giving a Thai perspective to the world of print media. We'll be finding what is filling editorial and creative appetites in Southeast Asia's largest economy, what's binding some of Bangkok's best magazine titles, and also going to Paris, where a familiar name is hitting the shelves en français. We're very glad to welcome you to The Stack this week, brought to you from the Thailand Creative and Design Centre here in Bangkok. Our two guest magazine reviewers are sitting here ready and keen to work through a stack of magazines. First, we have Pratan Tiratada, managing editor of a title that expresses everything that is at the cutting edge of Thai architecture, design and the arts. Bangkok-based magazine Art4D makes sure that the best Thai architects and artists aren't just following global trends, but are making them too. Welcome, Pratan. Just tell us about your magazine. So how often do you print it, and what's the distribution? Is it just here in Thailand?
Basically, it's distributed around Thailand, but I've seen a few in Singapore, in Malaysia, somehow. I don't know how. But yes, we exhibit since 1995.
And how many times do you come out? Are you a monthly magazine?
Supposed to be monthly, but finally, we found out that 11 times a year would be better for us. We skip in December.
I think we skip in December as well. We do a nice December-January double issue. It lets you have a little bit of time off at the end of the year, and it's quiet on the advertising front as well. Now, I was reading your magazine, a very interesting comment at the front of the magazine saying that, you know, that it's very important for Thai designers this time to be thinking not about copying what's going on outside of the country, but finding something that's very distinctive and Thai to tell the world. How important is that story for you?
Actually, it's a passion to do something we love. I think all the publications in the world focus on what they're really keen. So me and my partners really interested in art, architecture, and design. And we just select the one that we love.
But you're trying to encourage people not to be copying what's going on elsewhere.
I'd rather say that we just want everyone to do anything based on his original style. But actually, it's very hard for design scene or art everywhere in the world to say that this is really original. So I just skip this point.
Okay. And also joining us is Lynn Visadharan, editor-in-chief of another very different Thai master of print, 2 magazine. This glossy title has become a byword for BKK Chic and is not content with just models and makeup alone. 2 magazine's mission is to be a voice and platform for a new generation of people in Thai society who are looking to differentiate themselves from their predecessors. Let's find out how an editor does that. Welcome, Lynn.
Hello.
Now, just tell me, I was reading about your magazines. The extraordinary thing is it started off as a men's magazine, and a couple of years ago you kind of decided to ditch the guys alone and become a magazine for everyone. That's a very complicated transition for a magazine to achieve.
I think it was quite complicated, but because I wasn't there from the start, so when I came in, it was sort of bringing together a new perspective and kind of really looking at the context that we were working in, which is Bangkok, and trying to see what the gap in the market was, what sort of publication or content was missing, and also this type of target audience that we wanted to speak to.
Now, we said that you want to be a voice for a new generation. So did the magazine feel that actually the society was changing here very quickly, that, you know, that the economy is changing very quickly, that the old magazines didn't really reflect what was happening for a younger generation of Thais?
Yes, very much so. Also, not only that, but, you know, when we were a men's magazine before and when we decided that we wanted to reach both men and women, it was kind of trying to widen our audience. And what had happened was, when we came back to look at what sort of men and women we wanted to reach, we tried to understand what was going on and seeing how that society, like you mentioned, has changed quite rapidly. I studied abroad, and when I came back, I think there were a lot of things that people within my scene or within my generation couldn't really relate to in terms of what was being published here. And so that's the sort of space that we were trying to fill.
And tell us, is your magazine an independent title or is it owned by a big publishing company?
We're an independent title.
And
one magazine is okay. Is a lot of work. It's enough.
And tell me, how often do you hit the newsstands?
We're supposed to be a monthly, like Khun Prathan said as well, but I think right now, since I've been on board for the past 2 years, we've also been trying to really establish ourselves and really looking at our positioning and looking at how we could work better in the space. And so to begin with, I think we've been coming out maybe every 4 to 6 weeks. And so in that sense, we're about 11 copies a year as well.
That sounds like a few kind of scary deadlines slightly missed.
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. But for us, you know, good things, you know,
they come take time to
yeah, of course, and come to those who wait.
Good. Well, Lynn and Prathan, don't go away, because there's lots more to talk about during this special episode of The Stack coming from Bangkok. Now, before we get too swept up in the editorial chit-chat, our Tokyo bureau chief, Fiona Wilson, is also in Bangkok with me. She went to meet Shane Suvik Appakornikal at Sirindia in his gallery and publishing house, which is set in a converted wooden building close to the river here.
My name is Shane Suvik Appakornikal, and we are at Sirindia Gallery in Bangkok. And I'm a publisher and a gallery director of Sirindia Gallery. Sirindia was started in 1976 by Michael Aris's twin brother. Michael Aris is being the late husband of Daw Aung San Suu Kyi of Burma. And he was a Tibetan studies specialist. So the publishing company Sirindia means the Silk Road between China and India. So it was known as publishers of books on Himalayan art. So it focuses on Tibetan art, Nepal, India, and in the cultures of the Himalayan region.
I'm assuming you inherited a few titles, but you're also doing your own titles now. Can you tell us some of the new titles you've added to the collection?
Yeah, I took over the business in 2003, and since then I've done about 40 titles. And starting with the book called The Circle of Bliss, a Buddhist meditational art, which was a groundbreaking exhibition of Nepalese art in the U.S., and you know, from there, there are many other projects, from very academic Buddhist art specialists to sometimes interior design, but very unique ones. Like we did a book on Kathmandu Valley style, which is focuses on houses, old house and buildings and renovated heritage properties also in Nepal, and which I was very happy that we did in 2007, because right now, some of the houses were gone now, were demolished, and all tenants moved, and the landlord has resold the building. And so we wouldn't have had this record if we hadn't done it then.
You've got this book called 30 Heritage Buildings of Yangon, and I think everyone's interested to see what's going to happen to Rangoon. You know, everybody knows it's got this amazing heritage, a lot of colonial architecture, and I think people are a bit worried that as money pours into the country, what's going to happen to these buildings? And you've done a great record in this book. So can you talk to us about this one?
Yeah, it started about 2 years ago, just before or after Aung San Suu Kyi was released and the country is being open to Western media. And the idea was to make a report to the government that there are significant colonial building heritage that to be protected. If the country is open, they were, you know, the Association for Myanmar Architects was the one who makes selections of these buildings, make these records. So the idea is to give the government a list of buildings to be protected. So that's how it started. It was supposed to be an easy report, and as you know, once the country's open after the release of Aung San Suu Kyi, and so lots of interest in this building, so we decided to make it a proper book. So that's how it came about, and with the great support from a new organization called Yangon Heritage Trust, which Dr. Tan Min Wu has been informing the outside world that this is a great city with lots of very important buildings in that era, from that era. One of the, my favorite buildings, and probably the former immigration department, it was built as the Harrods of the East before. So it's a great department stores of the East. You know, people stop in Yangon to get cigars and all that. So it's fascinating to see that it still exists and what will be the future existence of it. And the book has really sold very well, so it's sold out now. We are remaking a new version, because after this book came out, we got a lot of new information. We were contacted by families of architects, and so the author has been collecting new information, and we probably maybe reformat the book a little bit, and also including new information that we have. Some building have been auctioned off. It's going to be some hotels or some department stores. So we want to update, keep that up to date.
This is quite a niche market. Who's buying these books?
My main customers are libraries, collectors, dealers, and people who have general interest in Himalayan arts and Asian arts in general, because I've done also books on Chinese sculpture, one of the groundbreaking ones by a single author. Serindia is known as a publisher of good quality, very high quality art and academic books. So it's used as reference by the academics and libraries.
So how does your publishing business tie in with your gallery?
I moved back to Bangkok in 2006, and I was shown this property where the gallery is now. It was an old house owned by Dr. Bunsong Lekakun. He is Thailand's first wildlife conservationist. He was the first to write a book, Guide to the Birth of Thailand. And so people who's in the field knows what this building is, where his office is. And he passed away more than 10 years ago. And this property was purchased by a real estate developer and being redeveloped. And I saw it just before they were gonna start the project. So I thought, oh, this is a very nice private homes and near the Oriental Hotel, and you never have this kind of property again in this location. So I thought it would make a nice gallery. And I thought it could be an extension of my publishing business, because now instead of working with photographers and artists and to make a book, I can actually show their art.
So what kind of artists are you showing here?
At the moment, we are showing a Mongolian artist, a painter. His name is Shen Dongjin Hurobata. I saw his work in a group show in London 10 years ago, and I always remember his work. So a couple of years ago, in 2010, the gallery show had a photography show on Mongolia. It platinum prints on Mongolia. So it was very popular, and the Mongolian embassy in Thailand always suggested names of Mongolian artists that maybe I would be interested in showing. And I told them, there's only one artist I want to show at the gallery. It's the one I saw in London 10 years ago, and that's him. So it happens that we were lucky that he also agrees to do a show with us. He was sent to St. Petersburg when he was young. So he was trained in Russia in, you know, very academic European painting. So it's really wonderful to see, you know, such work in a classical training, and we interpreted in the Mongolian landscape and setting, the seasons. It also lends to his kind of style. So when you see his painting, you can't be mistaken. You see Mongolia, but then you see the oil painting, the techniques, the composition, that's very, very classical. And it's silent, quiet, beautiful colors. One of the paintings in the shows has very, very beautiful light blue. It's like clair de lune. I always tell people, if that were an imperial porcelain in clair de lune glaze, that would be, you know, a couple million dollars, and very rare. So it's that kind of color sensibility that he has that makes his work very attractive and also uplifting at the same time.
Can I just ask you, who are your customers at this gallery? Who comes through the door here?
All kinds of people. People, a little bit of foot traffic, and also tourists, as well as Thai customers. Because the Thai contemporary art scene is very active, and there are a lot of people interested in what's happening in the arts and how art can be used to as a decoration in their homes, or even building a serious collection. So instead of going to galleries, or interest in art has become more popular as an alternative to malls. So at the we also have a bookshop at the Bangkok Art and Culture Center called Hardcover, the Art Bookshop. And there I see a lot of people bringing their children to museum to look, to expose children to art, contemporary art as well as. So it's nice, it's refreshing to see this kind of trend.
So have you got a new title coming out?
Actually, there are several, so about five of them. I'll just bring up two. One is called Gundan Chopel, Tibet's First Modern Artist. It's a record of one of the Tibetan artists and scholar, poet, who had traveled to Southeast Asia. He's been to Sri Lanka, to India. He's exposed to cultures other than the high Himalayan region. So he was this fascinating drawings and watercolors that he's done. So it's a book about his work in the collection of the Latsa Library in New York. Who has the surviving paintings and sketchbooks and notebooks. And the other one is the autobiography of the Fifth Dalai Lama. The Fifth Dalai Lama is one of the greatest Dalai Lama in history of Tibet, and he was like accomplished in many things, art, politics, and he was the one who went to see the Emperor of China. So his autobiography is very fascinating, this trips and gifts and all the political intrigues and the personalities in the story. Yeah, so it's a translation from the original Tibetan text by Samten Karme. So that's one of the new books.
That was Monocle's very own Fiona Wilson reporting from Bangkok, from where we're bringing you this special edition of The Stack on Monocle 24 with me, Andrew Tuck. We're back right after this.
Each week on The Curator, one of our Monocle editors rounds up the very best of the week just gone on Monocle 24.
You can be European, meaning reliable, responsible, you believe in democracy and environmental protection and, you know, equal justice. These are all Islamic values too.
From hard-hitting political interviews to live music sessions, from food and film to retail and travel, we'll handpick the best of the week's shows for an hour of essential listening.
It's not like New York. Because New York, it's like you can walk to Central Park, you can walk anywhere you want. There's an urban continuity. In here, you have to get into a car or get into something that moves and get out of here.
That's The Curator, premiering every Saturday at 9 a.m. London time on Monocle 24. brought to you in association with Rolex.
You're listening to The Stack with me, Andrew Tuck, where it's time to get stuck into some of the titles our guests today have brought with them. And we're going to start with you, Pratan, first. You've been down to Asia Books, I know, and raided their bookshelves and found a few titles you think are important for Thailand. What's the first one that you want to talk about?
Actually, I couldn't find what I really expect for, but finally I find two. One is this title is Bioscope. It's the movie magazine, but very, very cutting edge. Lots of attitude, lots of...
So let's just describe this for readers. So often when you pick up a title that's about film anywhere in the world, it's kind of flimsy. It's always on gloss paper. It's got a picture of a star that you recognize on the cover. Here they've gone for something very different. It's a matte paper, a high quality matte paper.
And they commission the designer to design the cover every issue.
So they choose a different designer for every issue. And
right.
And do you know who that is on the cover this time?
Ryan Gosling,
Ryan Gosling, but he's been covered with kind of dripping blood and turned into something that was half between a kind of a Rothko painting and a photograph. What's interesting is as you pick these magazines up, there's a divide, isn't there, between who decides to publish in English and who decides to publish in Thai. So, for example, I know that Lin, your magazine, is all in English. What is that divide? What makes the decision whether you're going to publish in Thai or whether you're going to publish in English?
Well, for me, I came, when I joined, we were already in English.
So you're claiming there's no blame on
no,
you.
No, no, not at all, not like that at all. But actually, there has also been consideration about adding, you know, a sort of like a Thai section within our magazine. But to start off, because of our target audience, us being sort of a new generation of Thai people, it's all about, you know, being able to... be bilingual, being able to understand both sort of international culture and local culture, and also having that sort of cosmopolitan sort of way or approach towards the things that you do. And I think with a lot of our readers, they already read English language magazines, but what we're trying to provide is an English language magazine that they can relate to or has content that is directly connected to them, rather than reading, let's say, Vogue from America or like Vanity Fair or W magazine, because a lot of the people featured in there, you know, they don't know personally. But a lot, if you look through two magazine, I think for people here, you know, a lot of the people that are featured are very recognizable to them.
Just on that language question, Pratan, you kind of cheat it a little bit. You have half in Thai and half in English. You please everybody. And again, was that a decision because it was important to feel international on the one hand, but kind of also rooted in Thailand on the other?
Yeah. Basically, we want Thai audience. But since the content of my magazine is really niche market, you know, we have to share some of the international audience as well. That's why we decide to go bilingual. But there's some positive point for Thai audience as well, because I think half of the artists or architects who been featured in the magazine can represent the magazine as their portfolio to the international world. I mean, some artists go to the funding source with this magazine, and finally they got funded.
And tell me, Lin, what's the first magazine that you'd like to look at today?
Well, I wasn't sure whether we were supposed to bring local magazines or not, but because I brought some of the magazines
you're welcome
inspire
to bring
me.
Local, and you're welcome to bring anything with it, so, as long as it's a title that you like.
I brought the Japanese one.
Oh, okay.
We'll come to your Japanese
choice
second.
Can we start off with my Japanese one then?
Yes.
Okay, so I brought Casa Brutus, but this is quite an old copy, but actually it's one of my favorite magazines of all time. Like when I went to uni in London, we used to go down to the Japan Center and, you know, pick this up every month. And even though I was studying fashion, I always felt that Casa Brutus always had all this amazing information about architecture, about design, industrial design, and food, like all the photography for food. I guess the Japanese do it best. I was just flicking through it earlier today and I was so hungry just looking at some of the little food photographs.
Casper is an amazing magazine, and I think a magazine that we've often, as Monocle, looked to as well for inspiration. Just tell me here, when you go to the newsstand and when you think about your own publishing industry, where do you look to for inspiration? I know that actually for Monocle, we do look to Japan because it seems to print magazines in an incredible quality. It's got really incredible aspirations about how it puts its magazines together. Are you looking to Europe? Are you looking to America for best practice? Or are you actually looking around Asia at other magazines for inspiration?
I think mostly for my team, we look a lot at in Europe for a lot of the aesthetics, to America for a lot of the way that they present their content, because the way that I think American magazines present its content, it's always somehow rooted in popular culture that I think in a way resonates very well with when we kind of translate it into the local context. I think that's sort of being able to connect to local popular culture, or that sort of sensibility, resonates well with our reader. But also for sort of overall inspiration, I think Japan kind of trumps always anyway, because I think they just do it very well there.
And Prasanna, for you, where do you look for inspiration?
Actually, to me, I think everywhere in the world, when we go to the newsstand, we will find two different parts. The very first part is the things that we can find everywhere in the world. It's all the same, the international titles, Times, Newsweek, or many issues. But the other part is the really rare publication, which is collectible to me. I just bought them all and stack them in the room.
We like people who keep print in their houses.
I set my room on fire once.
Yeah. It should be
all
kind
my
of
books were burned.
Art installation from different titles. Some is Indian, some is like the language that I...
But you're looking all around the world then at magazines mm-hmm. that you like and admire.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, we're going to come back to your stacks of magazines in a moment. But first of all, we're going to have a look at Vanity Fair France. Welcome back. This is The Stack on Monocle 24 with me, Andrew Tuck. With a history that can be traced back more than a century, Vanity Fair today sells more than 1 million copies each month in its home market, the United States, and hundreds of thousands of other copies of its various international editions around the world. In addition to British, Italian, and Spanish editions, Vanity Fair France is hitting the shelves for the first time this week. The French version promises to be true to the original philosophy, namely a balance between investigative journalism, glamour, news, and beauty, but with a French touch. Monocle's Paris correspondent Tom Burgess Watson was at the magazine's launch, where he caught up with Anne Boulay, the editor-in-chief.
Thank you very much, Anne, for speaking to Monocle 24. Just start by telling us, why have you decided right now to launch Vanity Fair, the French version?
Because we really thought, well, it's a thought that we had actually 2 years ago, but we thought that France was at long last ready to have its own Vanity Fair, because I think... This French society has changed and is now ready to get this very unique mix between investigation and glamour, which is a couple that is not very likely in the French press. But we sort of felt, because it's all about intuition, that it was time for us to launch.
Where do you want to find Vanity Fair France on the newsstands here? Where would you like to see it positioned?
We'd love to see it positioned between high-end women's magazines and probably picture magazines or news magazines, which is something that is very typically French, because it's really in between a women's magazine with its luxury, glamour, and so on, and between news magazine with loads of information, long-form journalism, and things that, as I said, don't necessarily get along very well in France. So we'd like to be right in the middle of this, in a place that doesn't exist right now, but that we're going to carve for ourselves.
I'm looking at the front cover of the first edition, which is right in front of me. I love it. And you've chosen Une Américaine à Paris.
Absolutely.
And it's none other than Scarlett Johansson. What's the thinking behind that?
It's very transatlantic. We believe that we are very American. We're also very French. and we thought that she is one of the most beautiful Hollywood stars. She has an apartment in Paris where she lives. She has a French boyfriend, which helps. And we thought that she was a very good sort of medium and a beautiful one. She embodies the qualities that we see in Vanity Fair. She's fun, she's sexy, she's good looking, she's smart, she's brainy, she has a great voice. And we thought that we feel honored that she agreed on being the voice of the first French Vanity Fair.
And your tagline is brillant d'or, mordant dedans. Talk us through that.
Which is glossy on the outside and gritty in the inside, and it's exactly what we're trying to be. And it's what Scarlett is. She's very glossy on the outside, but she's very gritty in the inside. You'll see. And also, she told us that she can hear the accordion from her window in her French apartment, and we loved the idea.
Here in France, it's difficult to report and do hard-hitting investigations on public figures. Do you think that's changing in some respect?
I totally disagree on this. I totally disagree on this. I think it's a very Anglo-Saxon legend that that is absolutely not true. Our press, maybe we didn't have the Watergate, but we had tons of affairs. Look at the Betancourt
affair. You've had the DSK
affair. Yeah, we've had. Yeah,
but that's changed things, hasn't it? That's shaking things up.
I don't think it's changing. I think that the rest of the world is trying to. Is you know getting interested in what happens in France because it has more international impacts probably, but I beg to differ. I don't think that it's a new tradition. I think it has always existed. Think about Zola and so on. I don't think it's true.
And clearly, there's an appetite for it.
Your look is changing probably on us, and I love that.
Magazine spending is up here in France. That's quite surprising, and that must be good news for you launching right now. What is the French fascination with magazines?
I think, you know what, people need to entertain themselves a little bit. They need information, that's for sure. But, you know, they also need to have a good time. We are in a world where fun is not on display every 5 minutes. And I'm not saying that we have to make people laugh, but I really think that the press should entertain people, should feed them with very good news, should feed them with thoughts, and should feed them with beautiful pictures and with fantastic stories, and that's what magazines are about. And I'm really very happy to see that, you know, in these days where you hear, and I love that, about digital all the time, the good old, you know, Gutenberg invention is still alive, and that the century-old magazine can suddenly be born in France.
Well, long may it last. Anne Boulay, the editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair France, thank you very much indeed for speaking to Monocle.
Thank you so much.
That was Vanity Fair France's editor-in-chief, Anne Boulay, speaking with our Paris correspondent, Tom Burgess-Watson. You're listening to The Stack on Monocle 24. Welcome back to this Thai issue of The Stack, brought to you from here at the Thailand Creative and Design Centre in Bangkok with me, Andrew Tuck. Today, we're lucky enough to be joined by some print professionals who share a passion for the paper side of life. Pratan Tiratada of Art4D and Lynn Visitharan of Two magazine. Now, let's just return to the industry here. Lynn, perhaps you first of all. It's a remarkable moment, actually, here. We were at an event this week where three people told me that they'd started magazines in Bangkok in the last 6 months. Is that typical? Does it feel a kind of vibrant time even now for the print industry here in Bangkok?
I think definitely, especially in the past 2 years, there's been this sort of surge or sort of revisiting of that passion. I'm not really sure where it came from, or perhaps it's because the people of my generation or of the older generation are reaching a point where they're able to, you know, do something of their own. And because we love print and we love print media so much, that's sort of the thing that we always return to, or it's sort of a romanticized fantasy type thing that, you know, some people, some groups of people, they want to go and make their film or, you know, become a DJ or something. But I think for in my generation, everyone always, you know, I want to start my own magazine. So perhaps it's just they're reaching a point where they can actually afford to do so.
And Preston, tell me, for you, what is that migration between print and digital? Are you managing to keep people reading on paper, or are you finding a pressure here, even in Thailand, for people who want to kind of read online?
I've been warning since 5 years ago that be beware of the digital media. And however, I still love paper, but I prepare myself to be online.
And so at the moment, you're not online. You're still all just on paper?
Actually, we're online, but it's just a tablet.
A tablet version of it?
Yep.
So you create a tablet version of the magazine?
Right. And we do create the blog called art4d.asia.com in order to penetrate the new market.
And for you, Lynn, have you found a kind of need to create, you know, a buzzy website? Or are you still finding that people... The nice thing about your magazine, you know, a really beautiful gloss cover. It's got, you know, a vivid orange kind of work there. There's something about it that makes you want to pick it up. And it's, you know, if you had that under your arm, it would kind of define who you were here in Bangkok. It would tell you something about the kind of reader you are. We all know that websites and iPad apps are great, but you never know what people are reading. It doesn't help you define yourself for your audience or for your advertisers. So tell me, what's the balance you find between what you need to do as a website or online and what you do on paper?
Well, I think when we started off or when I joined, we decided to actually put the digital side on hold, also because we were changing so much in terms of the content of our magazine. We didn't want to really confuse our reader. And so in the first 2 years of me working at Two, we just wanted to focus mostly on our print product, trying to drive people to really read what we were doing in print. Actually, we've recently launched our website and we're kind of beginning to go live, which has a blog element about it. But because we're not really a fashion magazine per se, in terms of content, we're always just we're still in the process of building our voice and creating our own narrative. And so in terms of that, it's also a whole different animal that we're slowly forming, and we're just still trying to have fun with it. To me, like, I've never really been a digital person, and I think in a way it's worked to our advantage that in Thailand I feel that people still really do enjoy picking up a magazine. Rather, I think Thai people spend a lot of time online, but mostly probably on
Facebook, on
Instagram.
yeah,
Line. I think Thai people are very visual, so in terms of that, it's more a pictorial side. But so we have really those platforms as well. We have Instagram, we have Vine, which is kind of like a new development for us, but it's still just kind of having fun and still always trying to drive people back to the print. And in terms of activity of reaching our audience, we've mostly been focusing on doing parties and events because we feel that that kind of manifests itself and reaches the group of people that we want to reach in a lot more meaningful way.
You know, we're big backers of the idea that you do events and you meet people face to face. It's the best way of kind of bringing your readers together and letting them see that you're kind of interested in their lives and in their world. Now, Prasanna, I know that you do a huge amount of events. You know, lots of design events. That's mm-hmm. That's also how you kind of make your money here in Thailand. You're not just a magazine. How important are those events for your brand?
Really important in terms of branding, in terms of revenue. I believe that in the past 2 years, it becomes our main revenue for the company because the cost of paper, the cost of production increasing every day, maybe. So we try to find some other source to less money and to pay for the employee and everything, the land cost. So finally, we find that making publication is the passion, and we can find some other sources of money.
And for you, Lynn, you do quite a lot of events. What's interesting, I guess, with your magazine as well as you, that you have, I guess, society pages is what you'd call them. There's lots of images of people at parties, at events, and that seems to be part of lots of magazines and newspapers here in Thailand. That scene, being out there with people as they have their fun, as they go out of a night, again, is it important for you to be there, to be present?
Yeah, I think it's definitely important. When we kind of were looking at how we wanted to do our social pages, I think social pages in Thai magazines, they're everywhere. Some of them have like 10, 20 pages. And so for us, it's trying to kind of find our own point of view of those events, and that's why we have our own photographers go to those events, and also we run our own events because we feel that it it lends sort of a liveliness or the lifestyle to what we represent as a brand, as two. So a reader could read too, and also if they go and engage in an event and our photographer is there, or engage in one of our events, they get to experience what we represent in real life.
And we, as we were saying, it's important for all publishing companies these days to think of, you know, other revenue streams. And so does that help you keep the magazine going as well by doing events for advertisers, by being present for them as well?
Yeah, I think definitely. And also advertisers these days they prefer the value add as well. So it works to our advantage, because I think for us, when we work with advertisers, we see them more as collaborators. So the people that we choose to work with, they come on and they feel that they can benefit from what we're able to provide, and obviously we definitely benefit from what they provide us.
Well, Lynn and Pratan, don't go away. We're going to have a short break and we're going to be back right after this.
The results are out. Monocle's 7th annual Quality of Life survey has shuffled the deck and ranks the cities we think are most livable in 2013. And the winner is Copenhagen.
This is a population and a city that's become markedly more extrovert in recent years. There's more life on the streets than ever before, and its people are not only more engaged locally, but also eager to show Copenhagen off to the rest of the world. Copenhageners have hit a high point of pride in their city, and it shows.
Copenhagen, our film about the best city to call home. On Monocle.com.
Ever thought of shaking off those golden handcuffs? Or had a daydream about going solo, striking out, far from the gentle plod of your day job? Then it's time you tuned in to The Entrepreneurs. Every week, we meet the brave, intrepid, sometimes audacious businessmen and women who have done just that.
What we're trying to do is not create a fragrance, but rather evoke something through scents.
It's a show that allows you to learn business nouse by example. So, if you want to learn how to open a thriving organic bakery, patent a savvy invention, set up an artisanal microbrewery, or export a finely crafted product to the world, The Entrepreneurs is a living, working audio Bible.
That's The Entrepreneurs, premiering every Wednesday at 1900 hours UK time, in association with Pictet.
And welcome back to this special edition of The Stack from Bangkok. My guests today are Pratan Tiratada of Art4D magazine and Lynn Visitaram of Two magazine. We were just talking there about the other ways that magazines begin to make some money. But before we do that, perhaps we should dive back into the stacks of magazines that you've brought. What's the second one that you've chosen for us?
This is a really, really old school one. Maybe it's older than my magazine. Mm. It's called Art and Culture. It's the documentary magazine, which a lot of research, a lot of good writing.
Now, so for example, this magazine, it's all in Thai, so you may have to give me a little bit of instruction about what the key stories are this month. So give me an example of one or two stories that they've decided to write about this month.
The theme of this issue is the year that we change from monarchy to democracy. And this is all
and
the
what,
story.
And what year was that? That was...
That's
I'm testing you on your Thai history. Now look at you both. You're
you're
both going to fail.
This is the Thai year, so you have to deduct 5, 4, 3, I think.
I'm really bad at math.
5, 4, 3.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that math is, but anyway. Now it's again a really interesting magazine. It's a perfect bound. It's got a very beautiful text cover. Interesting the use of the Thai language. It's actually a really amazing font for graphic designers.
Yep.
It seems incredibly playful. Some over 70 characters, I think, in your alphabet. For you as a designer, when you're working with your design team and they're making up a cover or they're making up a headline, do you look at it as a really beautiful thing to use the Thai script?
It's quite very hard when we have to choose the right typo for a certain design, but we find it very hard to because in order to design the new typology or the new font for a certain subject is very expensive, so we have to carefully select the one on the market. which not very much. So sometimes it's very hard to choose the right one for the right purpose.
Now, Lynn, what's the next title that you'd like to talk about?
I brought a copy of L'Officiel Homme from Paris.
And is this one from your archive, or this is?
Yeah, this is not the latest copy, but I've kind of been following since L'Officiel Homme just they did a sort of redesign, and Andre Saraiva, the graffiti artist, took over and sort of took over with the creative direction. But the reason why I brought it is, I feel that what they've been doing at L'Officiel Homme that is very interesting to me is the way that they create the community in Paris, kind of around the way that they've created that community around their magazine. And that to me is sort of an inspiration for what we do it too, is sort of creating and widening that community and how they do it so well, and it's very tight within their print. Obviously, aesthetically, what they do and what we do is very different, but you can see like certain elements that that are informed by L'Officiel
Homme. Now, Chrissy, before we go on, why is it actually called Two Magazine? Now, I know you're going to say this is before your time as well and blame somebody else.
No, actually, this is really funny that somebody was asking me the exact same thing yesterday.
And
drilling
you don't know.
Me. No, of course I know. Well, actually, the founding editor felt that with two is actually a play on word. Two is a play on T-O. Two, it's an action verb, to do something, to eat, to drink, to live. And so some of our sections within the magazine as well, we have to list, to feature, to style. So it's that sort of action verb that precedes an action of some sort.
And because obviously our listeners can't see the cover, but you have it's a numeral two that you have on the cover,
yes.
A giant numeral two. So it's not the T-O that appears on the cover, but this is the play on words that you're talking about.
Yes.
And just going back to that idea of community and gelling people around the title, obviously you have the parties and events, but do you feel that's been successful, that there is a two reader, you've joined them together in some way?
Yeah, definitely, and I think it's growing more and more. I think when we started out, my team and I, we were very experimental, and so in a way, quite being very creative and quite indulgent, but now we've kind of made a conscious decision to be a little bit more objective to what sort of thing we should be doing and not going and doing what we want all the time, and kind of really thinking about the reader and how to grow that reader. And what our goal is really is to be able to reach people that aren't necessarily like us, but then can probably appreciate the things that we like too, that they might not have realized before.
Now, Pratan, can you tell me that we're here at a time when Thailand's economy is growing very fast. There's a lot of money here in the economy. How important is that for the story of your magazine? Because I imagine that as people get more money, they're more interested in design and architecture. They think about, oh, do I have the money to commission a building? You know, what do I need inside my home, in my office? So do you feel that as the economy grows, it's been a good time for your magazine?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
It's never been like that. Because once, when the economy boom, people go to the mainstream test. To me, when the economy decline, we have more chance to introduce ourselves to the market.
So you're disappointed at how well Thailand's doing?
No. I mean, nothing to do with the economy. It is about the test. It's about the finding the right partner, finding the right audience, which all the time they all around all the time.
And for you, Lynn, how tied to the economy has been the success of Two Magazine? You know, obviously, you're picking up lots of the fashion advertisers. And we talked earlier on this week when we did our special briefing shows from here, from Bangkok, that in fact, you go to any shopping mall here, there's so many being built. They're full of labels. Every kind of brand wants to break Thailand. They want to get into this market. Has that made it a kind of a nice time for you that actually you've almost got the advertisers knocking on your door saying, I need the front page, I need the back cover?
Well, I think it's definitely been a blessing for us to come in right now and do what we're doing. And I think advertisers are definitely beginning to see what we do and see the value that we might be able to add to what they want. definitely the economy has I think really changed people's perception of, I think, how they consume, you know, lifestyle products, fashion products, as well as just kind of like the perception of our generation of being able to be sort of, you know, quite independent, and also how it gives them more of a gives us more of a freedom to be able to explore more beyond what I think the older generations.
And so when you talk about the magazine being the voice of a new generation, is part of that being the voice of, you know, actually, you know, a new generation that for the first time has access to the kind of money that allows you to be a bit more independent in your taste and your judgment and how you live?
Yeah, definitely. And also for us, what we really think about is that nowadays it's not just about you having the money, but I think for us, like, knowledge is power. And so being able to have that discernment to and that freedom to pick and choose whatever you want. And so if you look through the magazine, it's not just luxury products that we present. It's about sort of trying to create a narrative and building the sort of like experience that people can have from there. So for us, it's more about the stories and how, for me, it would be very interesting if somebody that, say, let's say a banker reads our magazine, and maybe they read an article in our art section, and they say, oh, well, you know, why is this art piece so expensive? That, you know, why are these people collecting art? And maybe it might create a sort of like a spark an interest. And that's sort of the thing that we would like to do, is create sort of a bridge for that to happen.
Now, I should point out, we're coming live from, well, not quite live, we're recording here at the TCDC in Bangkok, and you may have heard the sound of some cutlery being dropped in. That's because we're almost in the cafe, so that was going on behind. Don't worry, there wasn't anyone here falling off their table or off their chair, rather.
You can smell.
Yeah, we can smell the fine food. It's very tempting at this time. Now, Pratan, just tell me, you know, in your world, you've chosen a very large format for your newspaper magazine. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Why have you decided to kind of keep big? Because actually these days we talk about people being very mobile. They've got to stick their magazines in their briefcases. They've got to poke it under their arm. But you've stuck with this big format.
Actually, it used to be bigger.
Ours used to be bigger. Yep. Ours used to be huge.
And the main reason is because we present architectural picture. So we need panoramic views of the picture. And from the very first issue, actually, we tell every story through pictures. But since we're getting older, we try to communicate more content to the audience. So that's why it shift from the picture to the more maybe half the writing and pictures.
Well, thank you both for coming on The Stack this week. A really interesting show and a good chance to look at what's happening here in the world of Thai media. And that brings us to the end of edition 44 of The Stack from Bangkok. My guests today have been Pratan Thirathada of Art4D and Lynn Visitharam of Two Magazine. Our producer was David Pleasant. Our researcher was Fernando Agosto Pacheco and Samuel Chan. And our studio manager was Alex Funnel. If you have any comments or queries, then drop us a note at info@moncal.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time. And of course, you can always listen again via moncal.com or iTunes. So for now, from me, Andrew Tuck, it's goodbye and have a good weekend.